Well, in honor of Black History Month, Rise Up's radio's own Jessica Walker, I can't talk, set out to learn more about Martin Luther King Jr. and the impact he had on those around him during the Civil Rights Movement. She focused on a housing campaign he waged in Chicago from 1966 until his death in 1968. What she found was far more personal than she expected.
I still have a dream.
Yes!
It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream.
Yes.
I have a dream that one day,
yes,
this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
Yes.
February is Black History Month. A central figure in Black history, and indeed in our nation's history, is Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Dr. King's challenges to segregation and racial discrimination in the 1950s and 60s helped convince many white Americans to support the cause of civil rights in the United States. Today, he is an icon, being the only American besides former U.S. presidents to have a national holiday designated for his birthday. To learn more about the man behind this larger-than-life image, I interviewed someone who used to work for him all of those years ago.
We were in awe of Dr. King, and we used to call him, of course we never do it to his face, but we used to call him Doc, not because he was a physician, but because he knew how to operate.
The man I interviewed is actually my father, Monroe Walker. Born and raised on the tough streets of Chicago's West Side, my father felt the winds of change blowing in the 1960s and decided to get involved. At my age, my father found himself doing consulting work for the Black Panthers in Chicago, though he never became a Panther himself. After sitting in on a meeting between representatives from the Black Panthers and from the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, the SCLC, which is Dr. King's organization, he was heavily recruited by the SCLC to come work for them as a community organizer in their campaigns in the slums. And he did.
Chicago at that time was, and probably still is one of the most segregated cities in the country. And Dr. King thought that by coming to Chicago, if he could effectuate change in that city, then it would take place across the country, the changes would. And also, Chicago had a history of blockbusting. That is, on a block-by-block basis, the speculators would come in, buy up the property from the white people, and then the white people would then move out to the suburbs, and then the speculators would then sell the property at a high cost to a black homeowners. But anyway, Dr. King's idea was to come in to bust that up, to stop the discriminatory housing patterns, and also get some economic development in Chicago and sort of bring some equity and parity to the blacks in Chicago.
The campaign in Chicago proved to be tougher than even Dr. King could imagine. After having successes in the South with voting rights and integrated busing, King was unable to garner similar support in the North. He encountered formidable opposition from Mayor Richard Daley, and in August 1966, Dr. King led a march in a Chicago suburb where an angry crowd stoned him. The unprecedented resistance he received in Chicago was thought to be a turning point for Dr. King. Despite numerous well-publicized protests, the Chicago campaign resulted in no significant gains and undermined King's reputation as an effective leader.
The Chicago campaign was thought to have been a failure in the sense that we did not accomplish what we set out to accomplish, like the things that had happened in the South, where you got voter registration, where you got integrated buses. I myself don't see the Chicago campaign as a failure, because I think it raises the consciousness of people in Chicago, the people in the nation, as a matter of fact. And I think that helped to bring about some changes. And certainly in Chicago today, across the country, what Dr. King did and what we as community organizers did and what the Black Panthers did and what CORE did and the other civil rights groups of those days did was help to change the conscience of the nation.
Trouble, oh, trouble set me free.
As we all know, Dr. King would not live to see his vision fully realized. He was struck down by an assassin's bullet in Memphis, Tennessee. By then, Dr. King had become a full-blown radical, working to eradicate poverty and condemning the war being waged in Vietnam. Just before his death, King announced the formation of a Poor People's Campaign, designed to prod the nation's leaders to deal with the problem of poverty. The Poor People's Campaign continued for a few months after his assassination, but did not achieve its objectives.
I think we all felt a tremendous loss in Dr. King's death. As a matter of fact, those that were real close to Dr. King, the people that were actually at the Lorraine Motel on the balcony with him, said immediately something to the effect that it's all over. But certainly with the death of Dr. King, the whole concept of this Southern Christian Leadership Conference and an activism in fighting for the civil rights of minorities came to sort of an abrupt end. It was an immediate loss and a tremendous loss, and I don't think we've ever quite recovered from it, and I don't know that we ever will.
The entire nation mourned Dr. King's death, but I've been a firsthand witness to the effect it's had on my father. After Dr. King died, my father changed gears and became a newspaper journalist and author. He met my mother and settled down to have us kids. I would hear the stories about his days working for Dr. King, but I often wondered where the activist in him had gone. The man who used to sneak peeks under Dr. King's bed in order to see what he was reading so he could pick those books up too, now doesn't even vote.
Being in the streets and hearing the protests and going to the meetings and being involved in the staff meeting, there was such a tremendous feeling of hope. You knew it was going to work. You knew things were going to change. And so it was a real letdown when they didn't. And when he died, it was just a real void. And I think that then, I think we, not only myself, but others, I think, went the other way and lost all sense of hope. See, I get a little choked up about it because there's few times in the history of the world where things are not just evolving, but they're actually a revolution. And this was, and during the civil rights movement, we were actually in a revolution. It wasn't a violent revolution. It wasn't like the French Revolution. But things were happening very fast. And things were very, it was exciting times. And people were involved and things were going on. When Dr. King was alive and when Malcolm X was alive, it was just, there was a tension in the country that you felt it, you know, and it was good to be alive and you felt alive. And when that abruptly came to an end, then you had exactly the opposite feeling. Things weren't alive. There wasn't that tenseness. There was that, the letdown that told you that somehow we were abandoned and alone.
I was shocked to learn that my father had lost hope when Dr. King died. After all, this is the man that told me the world is my oyster and my opportunities were limitless. He, along with my mother, taught me to have hope and lots of it. Fortunately, I learned through this interview that my father had a little hope still left in him after all, and my natural attraction towards activism and my sense of duty in working to make the world a better place had deep roots. The final question I had for my father was what advice he had for the young activists of today, like me, who weren't around to see Dr. King in action.
Go and get your education. Learn all that you can, not only about whatever career or job you've got, but about history, about the civil rights movement, about the Civil War, about how this country was founded, about the Constitution, and getting an education so that you're a well-rounded individual, so that you can rise to the occasion when you're called on to be involved in civil rights, be involved in voting, be involved in the issues of the day. The other thing you'll want to do as a young person is to think in terms of justice and think in terms of being a part of the community, not just the black community, but the world community.
We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe
we shall overcome. And with this faith, we will go out and adjourn the councils of despair and bring new light into the dark chambers of pessimism. And we will be able to rise from the fatigue of despair to the buoyancy of hope. And this will be a great America. We will be the participants in making it so. And so as I leave you this evening, I say, walk together, children. Don't you get weary. There's a great camp meeting.
Rise Up Radio, WBAI. That was Jessica Walker of Rise Up Radio.